Today on Seculo, a new Vice President Harris gaffe brings major consequences.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey, welcome to Seculo. Folks, there are times when, you know, you can make a misstatement as a public figure. Usually when you make it, you kind of correct yourself immediately because you realize you said something wrong came out of your mouth. But what we see time and time again with whether it's President Biden, whether it's Vice President Harris, this time it was Vice President Harris. So she's overseas, a very easy trip. Okay, this is a trip you do. It's to an ally. You go to the DMZ with North Korea. You take the photo with the military that's there. North Korea could respond with some, you know, shooting up some rockets, but nothing directly at you. Again, should be pretty simple for a seasoned politician, someone who's been the California Attorney General, a U.S. Senator, and now Vice President. But she goes, and by the way, she was not speaking in like another language or anything, speaking in English at the DMZ in a message to the South Korean people, and this is what she says.
So the United States shares a very important relationship, which is an alliance with the Republic of North Korea. And it is an alliance that is strong and enduring. And today, there were several demonstrations of just that point.
Yeah, one of those demonstrations, the point was rockets being launched by North Korea as soon as she was done speaking.
You know, where's the correction? Like, she...
Oh, in the transcript,
she doesn't realize she didn't
even... mark through North.
But, I mean, she doesn't catch herself. So what's going on with these president, vice president is...
They don't know.
They're not even paying attention to their own words.
They're not only not paying attention...
Which words have consequences when you're a world leader.
Yeah, but, I mean, think about the consequences. I mean, you got a situation where you're in the DMZ. You are staring at an adversary. And you say our adversary is our alliance. This would be, I mean, the examples you could give where this would be similar would be ridiculous.
Yeah.
But they're doing this. And, of course, the media totally covers for them as if nothing happened.
Yeah. And she didn't correct. If she had stopped herself right in the next sentence, we wouldn't even be talking about this. The question is, why is she's not paying enough attention to the one simple speech she needed to deliver in this trip? I mean, this is simple. This is what you do. You go to your ally, South Korea. You make this speech. Everyone does it. It's normal. This is not high intensity. This is not like dealing with Ukraine, Russia. It's not even like dealing with the actual border crisis we have here. She goes to the DMZ border, but she can't go to the southern border. But again, she doesn't correct herself. So whether it's Biden, who he never does, and it's just, you know, gaffe after gaffe, but you can't explain this away with age. You know, this is not, you know, or anything like that.
But it's embarrassing for us on the international scene for the United States.
And it's embarrassing for the South Koreans,
yes,
who are our allies.
Of course, embarrassing for them. So our allies are embarrassed, our enemies are emboldened, and we're made to be a laughingstock of the country. And this is while Antony Blinken is out there talking about more sanctions being imposed on Russia, as if the sabotaging of the gas, the natural gas pipeline, is not going to be a significant enough crisis for Eastern Europe. I'm not saying we shouldn't sanction them, by the way, but it's just, this is like, it's a cacophony of errors. There's a lack of confidence. It's when they get up and speak, you don't feel confidential. You don't feel confidence. You feel like they are not prepared.
You feel like, right, they're unprepared. They haven't even read their remarks. This is how she opened her speech. Never went back and corrected it.
It's also weird the way she does it.
Just the tone.
Like, this isn't a joyous occasion.
No, it's not. I mean, it's not at that point. It's an act of war, technically.
Yeah, still.
Never came to peace. So, I mean, again, yet they mock, you know, President Trump and our colleague Mike Pompeo for trying to get the North Koreans to quit on their nuclear program. Just trying.
They mocked. But the idea of calling our ally our enemy and our enemy our ally,
never correcting. Who is writing this? What is the stress level at the White House because they're dealing
with...
It must be very high. I'm not an apologist for any of them, but I guess dealing with Joe Biden is not easy. We'll be right back on Seculo. response because, again, she did not quickly correct herself. And I mean, like, you know, that line, catch yourself, fine, move on. I don't think we'd be talking about it today. But this, again, it's weird, one, that they know a major national disaster is happening. Why is she,
in South,
like, why not reschedule that event? Because, again, that's, it's a gimme. It's a gimme trip. You go to your ally, you give a nice speech, you go to the DMZ, and you move along. I mean, that, you know, they're definitely not trying to engage the way the Trump administration did to try and actually fix something in North Korea or make some kind of deal with North Korea. So she's over there. This is what Congressman Burgess had to say from Texas, you know, talking about the border here.
Should we replay what she said?
We can.
I think we should.
Yeah, we can replay it.
So the United States shares a very important relationship, which is an alliance with the Republic of North Korea.
I mean, that's all you have to say.
Why does she sound so tired?
Not only tired,
it's painful for her to speak English.
But this is not.
I'm
sure this is a gaffe. Okay, it's obviously it's a gaffe. But how do you get this wrong, Colonel?
Well, yeah, how do you do that? And how do you speak with such lack of passion? This is one of the most tense geographic regions in the world. You are the vice president of the United States, and it was so blah and lackadaisical.
And then she gets the country wrong.
And then she gets the country wrong, too. And this is a very serious, you know, region of the world. Tensions there never completely go away. We don't even have a peace treaty with North Korea. We signed an armistice in 1953, which was basically an agreement to quit shooting each other. There has never been a peace treaty. We are technically still at war with North Korea. And she seemed almost disinterested in this, and then, of course, misspoke and said that North Korea is our ally.
And she's, by the way, our borders are. I mean, she's supposed to be in the wrong border, obviously. Wrong but, you border. Know, I thought what Congressman Burgess said, Jordan, was actually right. I mean, maybe sending her down to the border is not such a great idea on our southern border. Take a listen.
Look, maybe I'm glad she never went to the southern border if that's the level of expertise that she's going to bring.
That's what Wes is talking about. That's what the congressman's talking about. This should not be difficult because this is historically it's been going on since the 1950s, but you do need to be prepped because when you make these statements, you've got a propaganda wing on the other side of this who will take that, utilize it, play it over and over to a group of people that have no access to media, probably confuse their own people in North Korea by utilizing that soundbite because they can play it, and there was no quick correction. So it actually made it easy for the propagandists on the other side of this, and there are lots of North Korean propagandists, social media, all over the world they interact, and then they get out and say, you know, we've got the vice president saying we've been a long-term ally.
So North Korea fires two short-range ballistic missiles into the sea on Thursday, hours after the vice president speaks. Third round of missiles launched by North Korea this week, extending a record pace in weapons testing as it accelerates a push to expand its arsenal and pressure Washington to accept it as a nuclear power. And she calls them, Colonel, an ally.
Yeah, they actually had, you mentioned three missile incidents this past week. One while she was in D.C. and the trip was announced. Another one while she was in Japan. And, of course, two missiles fired after she left. What people need to understand, and I think most people do, and that is the Pacific Rim, the Asia-Pacific region of the world, is a tinderbox. North Korea is a rogue state, a hermit kingdom also. They, like Vladimir Putin, from time to time indicate that they are going to use nuclear weapons, and we have to take that threat seriously. There are millions of people within range of their conventional weapons, including the city of Seoul, Korea, with several million people there. And normal, just artillery rounds can reach Seoul from North Korea. You know, but it's a tinderbox. And then you add to that, Jay, the whole issue with China and Taiwan.
Yeah, sure.
The focus cannot be misplaced, and we cannot let our guard down with the Pacific region.
So the U.S. and South Korea intelligence reports are indicating that it is very possible that North Korea is gearing up for a nuclear test, one they have not done since 2017. Now, when the former president got all the flack about sitting down with the leader of North Korea and, you know, trying to get in dialogue, how many nuclear ballistic tests did we have?
None.
Now we've got, you know, we're on the verge of it, and we kind of fuel the fire by sending ridiculously confusing messages. And the left-wing media has given her a total pass, right?
Yeah, I don't even see it.
They picked it up anywhere, Will?
No.
Okay, no. So there you have it. We got a call. We should take it.
Yeah, Justin in California on line one. Hey, Justin.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, so obviously the VP misspoke here, but when referring to South Korea officially, you wouldn't even mention a cardinal direction. One would just say the Republic of Korea. So why would she even throw a direction in there? I mean, words matter. She doesn't even care. She never even bothered to correct herself.
You know what I think, Justin? I think we talked about this on our podcast yesterday, the Secular Brothers podcast. I went through people, the common mistake people make, which is what you brought up, is that there is South Korea, as we colloquially call it, is the Republic of Korea, ROK. That's how, like at international events. And then there's the DPRK. And it confuses people because that's the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. And that's North Korea. I feel like her speechwriters didn't even want her to go there. So they like took that part out because that can get, a lot of people make that mistake. Now that they correct it, but you even see it at international events, the guys who like handle the flags and the song that comes, the next anthem that comes on, and they put up the wrong Korea. That's one thing. Here, she couldn't even get the North-South part right, which is more of the U.S. version of talking about it. So I think, again, you could go to that next level of complication, Justin, which you should be able to do if you're vice president of the United States for an ally. But that means during that whole long flight over, is she getting prepped?
Well, that's the question that I wanted to ask. I mean, you know, you Skip Ash, our colleague, served in that region. I mean, so you're right to say it's still a tinderbox. I mean, it's a very dangerous area. To make a misstatement like that and then not just say, I got it wrong, I made a mistake, let me be clear, you know, they're our enemy.
Yeah, you would think that she would correct that immediately. And I also served there for 13 months. I've been to the DMZ.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I have. It's a tense region. Even in all of these years since the armistice was signed, when you go there, and I've been there twice, it is a tense region because you don't know what they're going to do. The other thing also,
what's the U.S. role in that zone?
We are there as a part of the UN peacekeeping force. There are still other United Nations countries that have troops there as well. We're by far the largest foreign presence there. And of course, the South Korean military is extremely strong. They have been armed and trained by us for over 50 years. But the other thing about this, though, I noticed in her remarks in South Korea and in her remarks in Japan that she over and over emphasized that the United States will not waver and its commitments to its allies. That's a good thing to say, but the only reason that our adversaries and our allies are talking about the U.S. wavering is because we have, for example, in Afghanistan just a year ago. So she's trying to reassure our allies that we won't abandon them. What a shame that we even have to go there.
Mm. I mean, it's an amazing thing to watch our foreign policy get so difficult. Here's what I say this all the time, and I mean it. When I hear them speak, whether it's the Secretary of State or some of the military generals, and this is no disrespect to the military or Admiral Kirby when he's doing his press conferences, it is not confidence building.
No.
I mean, that's the thing that's so. And then to the Vice President of the United States to go there and mess up the Koreas, which is basically what she did, it's breathtaking.
It is. And I'd even contrast some of this. So Nancy Pelosi was talking yesterday. She's older, but also very experienced. And take a listen, Bite 18.
That's really fun. Some of it needed right away for Iran, but it's more will be needed.
So that's what she said. Let me read it now so you can understand it, because this is another scary one. Disaster relief funds, some of it needed right away for Iran. Then she says, Ian, but it's more will be needed. Now, I hope that it was a gaffe, that she got Iran confused with Ian. But I also hope it's not, hey, we got to be careful on our expenditures for Florida because we got to get ready to pay some money over to Iran. Because that's what you start thinking when they make these statements.
Like, why is that on the top of her mind?
Yeah, why is Iran being confused with Ian at the top of her mind?
Yeah, we are prepared. Unfortunately, it would appear if the Iranians will just cooperate with President Biden and sign the document, we are prepared to give them billions of dollars in sanctions relief. And oddly and ironically enough, they will use that money to do what we say we're stopping them from doing, which is producing a nuclear weapon.
And the protesters are saying to the United States, we will topple the regime, don't prop them up. And unfortunately, we're propping them up.
Yeah. So, again, folks, we're going to take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. You won't believe the next topic we're going to hit on the broadcast. So you've got anti-Semitism going on at your university. So you want to pick somebody to say, you know, we need to investigate this. We need to make sure this is handled correctly. Would you pick someone from an unindicted co-conspirator from an Islamic terror group?
You think we're making this up?
But the City University System of New York did. So we're going to talk about that when we come back on Seculo. If you have questions about it, comments about it, 1-800-684-3110. Some of these things are so horrendous, you have to laugh a little bit.
But we're also in litigation. We are representing five professors from the CUNY system, the City of New York, University of New York system. So Jeff Balaban's going to be joining us. Also, you got to be listening to the Seculo or watching the Seculo Brothers podcast. SeculoBrothers.com tells you where you can get it. It's, of course, on Rumble, Facebook, YouTube, but also download on your podcast.
So you launch an anti-Zionism investigation at your university. And your choice is, well, who should we go to lead the investigation of what's happening? So we don't have this feeling where Jewish students on campus feel like they're being targeted or like the school is endorsing this kind of target. So who do they go to? Well, you go to Saleh Abdallah, a former employee of anti-Israel and an unindicted conspirator in an Islamic terror case. Of course, CARE I'm talking about, the Council on American Islamic Relations. And you go to Abdallah from CARE, who's now your diversity head at your school, and you say, Abdallah, will you investigate? You worked for CARE. Will you investigate and make sure these Jewish students are treated nicely?
So you would think this is, Jeff Balaban, our senior counsel, is with us. You would think this is an episode from Larry David, right? To Curb Your Enthusiasm. Nobody would believe this. So to set the stage, and by the way, we're representing five faculty of CUNY universities.
Do you think they would let an Israeli investigate the Palestinian student groups?
No, because we don't let Israelis come on campus to give speeches. So, of course not. Yeah. Jeff, we've got this, though. We are actually filed a Title VI litigation. We're laughing. It's not funny. It's serious. But what part is really unbelievable is they pick a person affiliated with CARE to do the investigation. You can't make this stuff up.
No, I mean, you're right. I'm glad you started the segment with laughter because you laugh or you cry. This right. is insane. Yeah. But it is beyond belief. It is, use whatever example you want. You take somebody who literally was a member of the KKK to investigate complaints of racism. It's insanity. This is CARE is an organization that the United States government has linked to being the part of Hamas's propaganda wing in America. Okay. And City University of New York, you would think they'd be a little more sophisticated than this. It's actually, this is part of the problem, Jay and Jordan. Is this intentional? I mean, are they actually trying to tell Jews you're no longer welcome at any of our campuses because you could not create a more hostile situation for Jews on campus than to literally bring an operative, a former operative, by the way, from the Minnesota, we know what a hotbed of anti-Semitism Minnesota is, from the Minnesota CARE and make them in charge of investigating anti-Semitism on campus.
So I'm holding in my hand right now a copy of the complaint that we filed with the Assistant Secretary for Civil Rights, U.S. Department of Education. And Jeff, I think it's important for our listeners to know and our viewers to know what exactly we're alleging in this. And we trace incidents back all the way to 2014.
That's right. You know, there have been a number of cases brought, or a number of complaints brought since, and we worked closely with the White House to change this so that Jews could be included in civil rights protections under Title VI, so that federal funds are on the line for institutions that promote anti-Semitism or tolerate anti-Semitism against students and faculty. And so we worked with that, and now we bring cases, we bring complaints, and one of them was the one that you just held up, Jay, which is against the whole system, the whole City University of New York system, which is many, many campuses and many colleges, because what we are alleging in that complaint, and it's online and people should look at it, it's almost unbelievable. Years and years of anti-Semitism across multiple campuses. It is a pervasive, system-wide situation that must be addressed at the top level. And as we see, the top level is making decisions that seem calculated to promote anti-Semitism rather than fight anti-Semitism.
But Jeff, I wish I could say these are isolated events. We've been representing professors for a year. There's a report now out of Berkeley And we're all starting to see this, and I got it. I must have gotten 7 copies of this sent to me last night. And at Berkeley, at the law school, 9 different law student groups have begun the academic year by amending their bylaws to ensure that pro-Israel supporters of Zionism are not allowed to speak on campus. The dean of the law school, who is a progressive, no question about it, Dean Chemerinsky, but he is also a Zionist, said, I would not be allowed to speak on my own law school campus because of the way that these students are reacting. And they're getting away with this as if it's, okay, now it's getting a lot of attention, so maybe it shuts it down. And California uniquely has a statute called UNRRA. That is their state civil rights statute. I have litigated that in California courts, and it's very broad protection and does not allow targeted racial or religious discrimination, among other things. So there are avenues here, but it's amazing that at Berkeley, free thought, open-mindedness, you know, the marketplace of ideas, if you're a Jew that's pro-Zionism, you're out.
That's right. And by the way, you don't have to be a card carrying anything, because you know, there's a very famous Martin Luther King quote where somebody started talking about Zionism and he said, you know, stop that. When you're talking anti-Zionism, you're talking anti-Semitism. Let's be clear about this. There have been over the centuries, over the millennia, all kinds of words that are used to mean Jew that aren't Jew. You know, they use the word, you know, in the Nazis used bankers and globalists, and there's all kinds of words now. In this generation, it's Zionist. But Zionist means Jew. That's all it really means. And so now Jews on campus are being told, your opinions aren't welcome here. Frankly, you're not welcome here. And so they're hiding their identities. By the way, you may not recall this. Maybe you do. During the election, one of President Biden's advisors, his most prominent Jewish advisor on Jewish affairs, he actually told observant Jews, like me, and I wear a yarmulke in public, told us maybe that we should stop wearing signs of our faith in public, signs that were outwardly that were Jewish. No, that's not the answer in this country. But every place that progressives dominate, in every cultural place, like campuses, that's what's happening.
What's interesting, too, it's not like the typical groups you'd think that would be banning these speakers. Like, it's not the Palestinian student group. I'll just go through the names. The Women of Berkeley Law. I mean, these are pretty broad. Asian Pacific American law students. Middle Eastern and North African law students. That one maybe gets a little closer to what you'd think of a group that would ban it. The Law Students of African Descent and the Queer Caucus. So again, they talk about all this inclusion and bring everybody in and don't discriminate against anyone. But at the most liberal city in the United States, the most liberal campus, college campus, I mean, known for it historically, and it's celebrated in a lot of ways for allowing this unbelievable amount of freedom of speech there, unless your speech happens to be in support, even as a progressive, like the dean of the law school says, a progressive Zionist gets banned. So all speech is okay. You can walk around naked on campus, which people do.
Right.
But don't say anything about Israel.
So I'm holding again in my hand a copy of the civil rights complaint we have filed. Jeff, what's the next move on this? Because people want to know what we expect here, and that is to get the Department of Education to commence an investigation.
Well, there is hopefully going to be mounting pressure in the City University of New York for them to think they need to clean house at top. They desperately need to understand what's going on here, because they have ignored one of the professors we represent. There's already been a finding of anti-Semitism. They already looked at it, and there's been an official finding by the government of anti-Semitism against him. So he's asked for there to be some redress. They're simply refusing to communicate to him. They won't talk to him. And they're just making it worse by doing things like this. So, yeah, we are hoping that by bringing this complaint, there will actually be a cost to the City of University to the tune of millions and millions of federal dollars.
All right, thanks,
Maybe
Jeff.
Then they'll
listen. We appreciate it. Listen, folks, we don't just talk about it. We take action. That's what we're doing. And we're looking at the situation now in California as well. Support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. And again, let everybody know how to get your podcast. Next one will be on
Monday. Sekulobrothers.com, SEKULOW. And we hit actually 100,000 unique viewers this week on the podcast.
Unreal.
So we're really excited about that. Sekulobrothers.com.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo. And we are taking phone calls. If you want to talk to us there, 1-800-684-3110. We're going back to this is about an ACLJ action topic too. We've been talking about Iran, of course, all week because of, again, the protest in Iran, the lack of the, I almost said Obama administration, because they didn't support the protesters in 2009. We're seeing the same kind of behavior yet again from the Biden administration, who wants this nuclear deal more than they do the liberation of the oppressed people of Iran. And unfortunate is to say the least. Well, and as many of the people who protesters there have said, you know, it's not that we're asking the U.S. to come in and militarily take out this regime. It's just stop funding, and the exact quote is stop funding the murders. Stop funding the people who shoot out at the protesters, because you do two things. One, they shoot out at protesters, people stop taking to the streets. They get an influx of cash from the United States and sanction relief, and guess what? People start getting a little more complacent. They're able to get more handouts going, and you don't have these mass protest movements. This is very unique in Iran. I mean, it's been since 2009 that we've seen this many people take to the streets. But at ACLJ Action, so ACLJAction.org, 8,481 of you have already sent a letter to your member of Congress to say hold Iran accountable for their support of terrorism, for the killing of this woman who was in their custody, of their morality police, and lost her life because her burqa was not as correct as they wanted it.
Some hair was shot.
I mean, like a strand of hair.
Right.
And she ends up dead. Now you have a protest movement. So we encourage you to go to ACLJ Action. It does not cost you a thing to send one of these letters to your member of Congress, but we have this tool that we've invested in at ACLJ Action set up. So all you have to do is put in your information, and it goes to your right representative. We have the letter written, but we encourage you, like for me, it comes up right here because it knows the location of this computer. So it's got the two Tennessee senators and the congressman from this district. So you can actually click on, do you want the letter to go to all three? So both senators, like if you want to go to Hagerty, Blackburn, and Congressman Green.
As you said, 8,481 people have already done this, which is a pretty amazing start to this campaign. And but look, this Iran situation, it's a big deal. And then you've got this gaffe, another one. We talked about the vice president's gaffe, but then you got the Nancy Pelosi gaffe yesterday, which is concerning because it makes you wonder, is something else up here? Take a listen to it. I'll read it to you afterwards because it's harder here. But this is what she said.
That's really fun. Some of it needed right away for Iran, but it's more will be needed.
So what she said was disaster relief funds. It was about money from Congress. Some of it needed right away for Iran. And then she corrects herself, but it's more will be needed. Now, I hope it's just a mistake, because I know what it probably also is. They're getting ready to deliver a pile of cash to the Iranians, and there's only so much cash we can deliver. So we're going to give, you know, potentially who knows how many billions of dollars to Iran to prop up their regime so they can then take their actions against the protesters that are trying to get democracy for the people of Iran. And at the same time, and this is what's ironic, we're going to what? Not get enough relief to the people in Florida who've been devastated now off the coast of Georgia and South Carolina? I hope these are I hope these are slips. I hope that the vice president somehow confused the Korean Peninsula. And I hope that Nancy Pelosi really isn't talking about that we're going to get ready to deliver a boatload of cash to Iran. I fear, though, on the latter, that that's the case.
Yeah, and this is the concerning part, is that why is that on the top of her mind when she's thinking about a hurricane? Ian and Iran, I mean, it just goes to say where, are, you know, because they're coming out of meetings, they're coming out of briefings. Is this where their mind is on Iran instead of where it should be, which is on Ian, which right now is pummeling into Charleston, South Carolina? I mean, that's not over. You know, a lot of the imagery we've seen out of Florida is the post, but this is still an active hurricane as we speak. And it's still at, is it still at hurricane strength as of right now? Yeah. So this is still going to wreak a lot more havoc on the United States and outside of
Florida.
Then
it's going to go right up to Virginia and up that way. Then it'll probably
dissipate. This is a big storm.
But yeah, that sure has. But we're praying for our folks and friends, a lot of listeners, a lot of friends in Florida.
Yeah, more people are back online. I see in the chat they've got their energy, they've got the electricity restored in Florida. So that's a good sign. But some of the imagery now coming out, totally devastating. Seculo. We are taking calls at 1-800-684-3110 if you want to talk to us on air. It's 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Denise right off the top in Maryland on line one. Hey, Denise.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. My question is this. The amount of gaffes that are being made by President Biden, Vice President Harris, and now Nancy Pelosi, I cannot help but wonder if these gaffes are not intentional, you know, to make, to kind of take us off the scent.
I'm not going to say they're intentional, but they are dangerous and they are confusing and they send out a really bad message. So
we look like we have our top two leaders of the most powerful country in the world, supposedly, can't get out of sentence. And they can't get out of speech without it always becoming never about the focus of the speech, but always about the gaffe when they screwed up. And that always becomes the focus. And I will say, just as an American, that's not good. You don't have to like Joe Biden and Vice President Harris politically, but when they're overseas speaking on generic, basic things like we are allied with the people of South Korea, you don't want them messing that up because it makes our entire country, especially internationally, who don't see, we're not making these between, oh, you're Republicans, you're Democrats. They are representing you when they're over there, like it or not. And every time Joe Biden speaks, I mean, it was horrible what he did about that congresswoman earlier this week. We didn't talk. That gaffe again.
Embarrassing.
So, and it was, yes.
And inappropriate. And
embarrassing to the world.
Yes. And
it makes us look like a joke.
Well, this is, you know, Andy, words have consequences and statements have consequences. And if you consistently get it wrong, it's not confidence building.
No, it's not confidence building. And especially for the leader of the free world, the leader of the United States, the country that emerged from the Second World War as the leader of the world, the president of the United States speaks and people listen and they listen to what he says or she says and they listen with great care and they expect a coherent, cognitively accurate, correct statement, a statement that is profound, a statement that means something, a statement that's given with deliberation and with thought. And we're not getting those. We're just not getting those.
It's the danger of this, of course, is like Jordan says, it makes us look like a laughingstock on the world stage. And that's what is the danger. Let's talk about something else. And that is more developments in the ongoing battle between former President Trump and President Biden's Justice Department. And this time there was an appointment member of a special master. And then the special master made recommendations on how these documents at Mar-a-Lago can be handled. And Judge Cannon disagreed, or at least in part.
Yeah, I read the order with great care several times this morning. Essentially, Judge Cannon, the United States District Judge, sitting in Fort Pierce for the Southern District of Florida, issued an order which essentially said early on that she appointed a special master to verify that the property identified in the detailed property inventory.
What is that, Andy?
That is an inventory that the FBI prepares, or any government agency prepares, after it has conducted a search.
Okay.
That's what they got, and they prepare an inventory. And she said, you prepare that inventory, and you verify that it is a full and accurate extent of the property seized from Mar-a-Lago, okay? The order imposed, she said, no additional requirements on the parties regarding the detailed property inventory. The special master, acting on his own, decided to impose special requirements and to do so by requiring that the specific objections that President Trump was going to make, attorney-client privilege, attorney work product privilege, executive privilege, presidential record, whatever that is, be made by when? Today, September the 30th, on these thousands of documents. And the district judge, Judge Cannon, said, there shall be no separate requirement on plaintiff, President Trump, at this stage.
What does that mean?
Right now, September 30th, it's a little early, she's saying, to review any of the seized materials, to lodge any final objections. In other words, whoa, wait a minute. We've got thousands of documents, not at this stage and not final objections. But she did not say that you didn't have to do that. She said 21 days after the defendant, that's the government's, receipt of notice of completion, and I calculated
what
that.
What is that a notice
folks.
Of completion? I want to explain this to people, Andy, because people don't. So a notice, these are, you did this as a U.S. attorney.
Yes.
What is a notice of completion?
That we're done, this is the inventory, we have completed it, and this is the totality of the documents.
Okay.
And what Judge Cannon said, the district judge, is no later than 21 days from that, and I calculated that, November 4th. November 4th, you will provide the special master, and this is what the district judge, Judge Cannon, said, with one comprehensive annotated spreadsheet that talks about your privileges, your executive, your attorney-client, your presidential record. And then she said it's got to be on a document-by-document basis. It's got to adequately explain the precise basis for the designation. It's got to include assertions of executive privilege, if you have any. It's got to be described the scope and rationale from which the special master can evaluate. So she's not taking President Trump's side. She's, as a matter of fact, putting a burden on the president, President Trump. But she's simply saying, Jay, give you more time to do it. And as I read this, it simply means by November the 4th.
But again, they're painting that no one should paint this as a substantive determination of culpability on either side.
No.
It's not. These are procedural moves. That's why we wanted to explain this. Right. Yeah. These are procedural moves when you've got a seizure of documents. So when you did this as a U.S. attorney, and in Treasury, we did the same. If you got documents, you made a list.
You made a list.
But here you've got hundreds of thousands of pages.
That's right. And what she simply saying is give the president more time, and I keep calling the president,
former
President Trump, more time, and specifically till November 4th to assert his privileges, and they've got to be specific. They've got to be on a document-by-document basis. So she's holding him to an accountable standard that is admirable in my estimation, but she's also showing one thing. I'm the district judge, and you are the special master.
Yeah.
You do what I say and how I say it.
How do things look, Jordan, as you're looking at it right now? Because this was in the political background. I think it's fading now, this whole, you know, what this means. How are things looking as you see it right now? You follow it closely. Where do you see the House and Senate?
I think the House is in great shape for Republicans. I mean, the number is, but the Senate is actually turning back. So we've seen some polls. I always say this, and we're still a lot of time. Less, but still a lot of time. And we're starting to see those races tighten up in a good way for Republicans. But, you know, you got to keep Pennsylvania. You need to win Ohio. You need to, obviously, like Florida. There was a talk even of that race with Marco Rubio getting close. And now he's back up with like a 6-point lead. So it's not to say though any of them are over and it's not done. But there's this trend back towards Republicans.
How does Georgia look?
Again, trending back towards Republicans. So
Kemp is up.
Kemp is up. Herschel is up maybe a couple points, and with Kemp up too, I mean, that you get two people at the top of the ticket, that's a good driving sign.
Georgia, you need to, that Senate seat's a net a plus one.
That would be a big deal to take out one of those very liberal
senators. But in Pennsylvania, you're trying to hold on to a seat.
Right, you're just replacing Pat Toomey.
And that race is...
Pennsylvania's going to be tight anyways.
Right.
Because it's a purple state.
Where do you see another pickup? Possibly Arizona?
Yeah, Arizona, Nevada.
Yeah, it looks like Laxalt's going to win. Yeah.
So you look at those races too. So you got to go East Coast, Midwest, and West.
So then you go back to these, you know, you got the...
And then a lot of... It could be very different feel in Washington, D.C.
If the House and the Senate are controlled by Republicans.
If the House goes alone, that a lot of these investigations
stop.
End and new investigations begin.
Yeah.
Like our friends Jim Jordan become the investigators, the lead investigators.
In fact, the Biden administration, wisely, is gearing up with the team to assuming that the...
They're about to go after...
The Congressional Oversight Committee... and the Judiciary Committee are going to be doing investigations on some of their moves. And created this hostile environment.
The Hunter laptop,
I saw that yesterday.
Fauci doubling his income during this whole thing.
Net worth.
I mean, you got to, went from a net worth of $7 to $12 million in 2 years.
So then you have, and then on top of that.
Why is a government employee?
Hunter Biden, the FBI agent that was in charge of that, is now being asked, Andy, to appear before the Senate Judiciary Committee. If you were his lawyer, you'd have him assert his privilege?
I would have him close his mouth.
Yeah. They're allowed to do that, and we respect the Fifth Amendment privilege. That's why it's in the Constitution.
Yeah, but if they start doing that, those hearings like that, you could assume that they're guilty.
Yeah. But they're going to try to do one more January 6th hearing, too.
Yeah, this week's got canceled. Now, I think they still did interviews with Justice Thomas's wife, but which, again, absurd that she had to even... She felt like she needed to go to clear her name.
She did.
She did testify. That was, I'm sure we'll see video of that at some point. But they canceled the hearing this week because
if they think they're putting pressure on Justice Thomas to change his opinion on the cases. Let me give you a breaking news alert. That is not going to happen.
I think he has a judicial philosophy at this point. It's pretty set.
Yeah, I think his judicial philosophy is set. By the way, he's ruled with us every single time.
That's what the left doesn't like. Of course, on the left side.
Scalia was the same way. Alito, too.
Most of them, if you're the left side of the legal world, their justices are also 100%ers.
Yes.
They just don't like that he happens to be one of the conservatives. Yeah.
We got a win in Pakistan we want to talk about coming back, folks. Yep. A lot of activity here at the ACLJ. Be back with more in a moment.
Secular. You know, we have an office, Center for Law and Justice, in Pakistan. It's based in Lahore, Pakistan, which is kind of a Christian hub inside Pakistan where a lot of Christians live. They are predominantly, it is just known as a pretty poor community. Not saying that to be nasty. That's just the truth, so I educate you. Very much oppressed by not even necessarily the Pakistani government, but the Muslim majority. And so you see a lot of abuse by Muslims who think they can treat these Christian communities however they want. And what we saw, this just tells you it's a very different kind of law we practice in Pakistan. And Shahryar Gill, who leads up our practice there, who's also a U.S. trained attorney as well as in Pakistan, he's actually going back soon. I don't give all the details away.
No.
But we're going to be able to get more of these stories visually to you as well this time.
These are heartbreaking
these
stories.
These are tough. This is tough. This is real.
So be prepared, folks. Yeah. This may not be great.
So we represented a family, Christian family, back in April of 2021. Their 9-year-old daughter goes to a store.
Like a little snack shop, right?
I mean, yeah, these are small, like town villages. Yeah. So that would not be weird that the 9-year-old goes down this.
Right.
A lot of these, I mean, to use a better word, I mean, it's like it's kind of slums. And so the snack shop is like next door to your house.
Yeah.
So she comes back and she comes back with blood. And on parts of her body where her mother is saying, okay, what happened? She said, a man did bad things to me. She points out the man, so they know who it is. Now, it takes some time, until August for this case to finally move. That's when her family got to ACLJ, Center for Law and Justice in Pakistan. And so we start representing the family of August of 2021. Now, just think about the time here. It took 33 court hearings over 13 months, 33 court hearings over more than a year, but the Center for Law and Justice Pakistan attorneys were able to ensure that this man who raped this 9-year-old girl, who was a Christian girl, thought they could get away with it because he was a Muslim and part of the majority. I always said the Pakistan legal system is not horrible. It's you got to get the system. You got to have attorneys like ours who can
function.
Do this for these families who have no money but need justice because the police are also scared of getting involved. Now, what ultimately happens here, we put him away for his whole life, which is good. It's the right thing. He's also been fined. And we were able to get the family to a counseling because this girl obviously needs a lot of psychiatric help. And so it's kind of this full scope legal. We're not just doing legal. I mean, it's criminal law. You're talking about, you know, putting
criminal
people
law,
away for life.
Law,
people, under their kids getting raped. This is tough stuff. And so, you know, when you get into that kind of legal system in a volatile place where you've got the Christian Muslim divide on hanging over at the top, but understand what we do is also this kind of full scale approach in a place like that. You don't just say, okay, case over. We got the guy. So we're still helping that family.
Well, I think
get,
this
work
is
work through this. You know, but we got them justice.
We did get them justice. 33 hearings. I want that to sink
in. The family got harassed by this man for over a year, trying to pay them off, showing up at their school. I mean, you know, saying he did. When it was everyone in the village said he was the one who did it. I mean, it was people saw him with her.
So, you know, the Bible says justice shall you pursue. You got to pursue justice in these cases. And Andy, you know, we operate all over the globe, but when you take Pakistan, which is not an easy place to operate, but your support of the ACLJ just helped this family and this young girl, this 9-year-old girl, significantly. But it took 33 hearings.
I find that just incredible to think that 33 hearings over a period of over a year, 13 months to bring this guy to justice. And by the way, he was a married man with 4 children. I mean, this makes it even more horrible. When you think about it, but the persistence that we used in pursuing these cases is what makes them come out right. Life imprisonment to me was a good sentence in Pakistan. It should have been worse in my opinion, but that's the best we're going to get. It's a tremendous victory, I think, for this child, and that's all she was, Jay,
yes.
Was a child.
Yep. And we've got a team over there. I mean, people understand, and it's a whole, like you said, it's a holistic approach. Yep. It's not the only country we operate in difficult places. I mean, we operate in other difficult places as well.
No, but what it shows is we're still able to operate in their legal system.
Yes.
I think that's an important point, is that because of your support of the ACLJ, we're able to represent a family that could not afford a lawyer in Pakistan.
No. Or a counselor.
To get justice for their, counseling for their daughter. So in this situation, but I just, as we said, we kind of warned before, this is not unusual there. This is kind of the norm story. This one actually had a better ending than a lot of them because in this case, the girl survived the crime. But we also represent a lot of families where the children do not.
And we also represent a lot of families in Pakistan where Christians are accused of things they did not do when they're in jail. We've got one that we're working, CC mentioned the other day, CC Hall, that we're working with the UN detention panel in Geneva because we practice there as well. So we're practicing, Andy, in these international tribunals to get justice.
That's right. It's a worldwide organization, obviously, the ACLJ, our counterpart in Europe, headquartered in Strasbourg, the European Center for Law and Justice that does a lot of work in the European arena and before the European Court of Human Rights as well. And so we have our lines of communication open, and we have lawyers on staff and in the worldwide arena to do these kinds of cases. We pursue them. We get justice. This case today, I think, is a landmark case. Pakistan inherited its legal system from the British. We follow that to its end.
Yep, and it's interesting. Like Jordan said, it's interesting that their legal system in Pakistan, if you could get their attention, actually does function, and it did. I want to change gears for a moment here with the last couple minutes left. We are expanding our outreaches and our communication capabilities. You know we're on every social media platform you can think of. But we also, Jordan and Logan just launched a podcast. They've only finished the third week. And this week they crossed a huge milestone in podcast. And that is
100,000 viewers, unique viewers, and three episodes.
Yep.
And listeners too. So yeah, our podcast is unique.
Not for the whole 3 weeks. That was just this week.
Yeah, just this week off 3 episodes. And so we're excited for people who are watching it. A lot of people view it that way. That's because we have great production abilities. And I think, you know, that's people say podcast now, but almost every podcast is also
a video cast.
And of course, but there are the traditional ways to listen in your car as well, like through Apple, iTunes, and Spotify. And I think yesterday, just to give you a sense of the podcast, it was titled DeSantis Tested, Rest in Peace Coolio, and Fast Food Chaos. So it's a little different. We had the head of Lear Capital on.
Yep.
We talked about Hurricane Ian and the DeSantis, kind of how he switched from being politician DeSantis to governor in a crisis, the test of leadership there, the impact of Coolio on our culture.
Your generation.
He passed away.
Yep.
A MyPillow sale in there, because we have advertisers for this podcast, and things Logan cannot pronounce. As well as things that
it's
Logan.
It's funny.
Could.
It's serious. It's great.
And it ended with the Kamala Harris North Korea. We actually covered that before getting into it on.
But
this
it's
broadcast.
In a whole different way of presenting it. And it, you need to subscribe. So you can go to secularbrothers.com. By the way, you're not the first Secular Brothers. You know that. So your great uncles were the Secular Brothers in the 1940s. They had handbag and millinery stores.
We have sheets.
Up and down the East Coast, and you've got sheets.
We got sheets and
gold.
Well,
your grandfather was in the sheets. Linen and things, don't you remember?
We got sheets, gold, and silver, and platinum.
Go. Yeah, there you go.
I think palladium.
But anyway, it's great. And secularbrothers.com. And, of course, support the work of the ACLJ. It helps the ACLJ out as well because more people watching us. We'll talk to you next time, folks. Have a good weekend.